Welcome, first-time listeners and returners to the Sports Deli. The Sports Deli is sponsored by SportRx. SportRx is the leader in sports prescription eyewear. You can find them online at sportrx.com. And don't forget to enter the code DELI10 at checkout for your special 10% discount. We also want to give props to PSK Collective. Be inspired in PSK, where their clothing promotes inclusivity, empowerment, and equality by supporting female athletes through the Women's Sports Foundation. You can find them online at pskcollective.com or at walmart.com. We also want to thank citylokes.com, where you can get your own personalized hats and phone cases, tees, accessories, and much, much more. I ordered two hats, and they're amazing. One of them says the Sports Deli, and it has a California license plate, and the other one has a Michigan license plate and says Speak Up and Dribble, Black Lives Matter. So check them out at citylokes.com, and don't forget to enter the code THESPORTSDELI at checkout for your special 10% discount. And we're so excited to finally be supporting Moolah Kicks. They're dropping in May of 2021. They are the first female-only brand basketball shoe, and you can find them online at Moolah, Moolah's M-O-O-L-A-H, Kicks, like shoes, K-I-C-K-S, plural, MoolahKicks.com. Again, much thanks to Natty White, the founder of Moolah Kicks. You can always send us an email to thesportsdeli@gmail.com, and you can also DM us on Instagram at Mike Hootner or on Twitter at Michael Hootner. A little bit about Hootie Hoot. I coached college basketball for 23 years, 15 on the men's side and 8 on the women. And I now coach at a low-income first-generation high school girls basketball here in San Diego. I played 4 years of college basketball. I'm a life coach. I have a beautiful daughter. I'm a professional basketball skills trainer. We love to share space with our guests here in the Sports Deli to talk about the intersection between race and sports, mental health and sports, equality, empowerment, empathy, leadership, education, sports, and solutions. We talk a lot about white privilege. We want to help mobilize, listen, learn, and pay it forward. Remember, your voice matters when fighting systemic racism. Read a book, acknowledge your white privilege, watch a movie about institutional racism, call your local or state representatives, and or have a conversation with someone that doesn't look like you. We have to change the economic, educational, police, housing, prison, and voting suppression narratives that currently need to be changed in this country. And the only way to do that is to listen and learn and then help be a part of the mobilization and change that we want to see. We're so honored that you're joining us today. And we hope that you can grab your favorite deli sandwich or bagel and your favorite beverage. And let's do this together in the Sports Deli. Right, we are honored to be joined by Los Angeles veteran, Inglewood Rays and Crenshaw legend, the humble and spiritually connected former NBA champ for the Detroit Pistons, Tremaine Foulkes. He was drafted out of Fresno State by the Denver Nuggets with the 54th pick of the 1998 NBA draft, the year of the NBA lockout, who hails to us from Los Angeles, California. He was not voted into the McDonald's All-American game, however. Baron Davis, on the other hand, voted Tremaine as the third best player he's ever seen from Los Angeles behind Shea Cotton and Miles Simon. And right in front of next Tuesday's guests, KJ, Christian Johnson. High praise from Baron. But was runner-up to Jelani Gardner, number 8 on Baron's list, from St. John's Bosco, from Cal High Sports Magazine State Player of the Year. Very interesting. He did not make an NBA on-court appearance until the 01-02 season. Played for the Clippers, my Pistons, where he won an NBA title playing alongside Mr. Big Shot, Chauncey Billups, North Carolina head coach Hubert Davis, Rip Hamilton, Rasheed Wallace, the Indiana Pacers, where he earned a roster spot after the Pistons and Pacers brought the Palace in 2004, and the New Orleans Hornets. You can see over his left shoulder, he's got his Indiana Pacers jersey. He also played with Lamar Odom, Elton Brand, and fellow Fresno State Bulldog Melvin Eli. He played for not only Larry Brown, Dennis Johnson, and Rick Carlisle, but executives like Joe Dumars, Larry Bird, and Elgin Baylor. While at Fresno State, he played for the legendary coach Jerry Tarkanian after transferring from Cal. He played in the Continental Basketball Association, what the G League was back then, and the International Basketball League, Cincinnati Stuff, where he was voted first team All-IBL during the 1999-2000 campaign. And while in Cincinnati, Oscar Robertson also served as an advisor to the Stuff organization. He also played in the NBDL, a lot of different names for these same things, basically, the Florida Flames and the Columbus River Dragons, by former Washington Bullet legend Jeff Malone, known for one of the most ridiculous buzzer beater shots ever on the left baseline as a rookie, where he heaved a game-winning three from behind the backboard, falling into the stands at full speed. And if you have never seen it, check it out on YouTube. It's literally incredible. And the worst part was it was against my Isaiah Thomas-led Detroit Pistons. Kelly Trepuka was on that team also.
Oh, right? Kelly. Yeah, I remember Kelly.
Yeah, best off-the-glass shooter maybe in the history of the NBA. He also had a brief stint in Venezuela, where he played professional basketball, and he's also a referee. He's an author, which he'll talk about later, and he's working on his documentary, and it's going to be out probably later this year or early next year. Kobe Bryant once wore his high school jersey from Crenshaw, but it's Tremaine's imitation of Kobe that you don't want to miss. You can find him on Instagram at Tremaine Folks. And we're honored. I've sort of had this connection with KJ lately, and Jelani's coming on and Ray's coming on. And I heard you on KJ. And I was like, man, I would love to chop it up with him. And anytime someone comes on to our show, we never know why people come on our show, but we're honored. And, welcome. Big ups and mad props for coming into the Sports Deli.
Oh, man, I appreciate it, Mike. You know, it's a pleasure to be here. You know, we know all the same people. You know, the basketball scene and sport, as well as sports, it's a small circle. So, it's good to see it still going on today with the communication and with everybody's, their passion, doing what they want. And it shows you can still be in this and have fun, long after, careers, have happened. And what I'm trying to do now is bring some positive influence to the youth, about my life story, my basketball career, and maybe my story can actually help a kid or two. And I wish, I don't wish, but hopefully off my story can influence, other players, and I know it's hard for a lot of ex-players to tell their story, knowing all the money, that has disappeared. And it would hold them more value to share that story now that they're away from that. And that's what I'm doing. I think my story holds more value now that I'm away from the game, and you see these next generations coming up. And if there's anything that we could do, is share our story to help them not go through losing houses or financial difficulties, knowing how to spread your money evenly to family and friends. I tell it all, and hopefully my influence will get a couple other guys out to, out the bed and say, hey, Trey, you influenced me to share my story too. So, I won't see the next generation go through the same mistakes I went through.
Well, that was a lot. And we're going to talk about a lot of those things, from the black dollar and the power of the black dollar and what Barron's doing and what Matt's doing and Media 34 and what all those guys are doing, to that umbrella in its simplest form, in terms of, do the current generation of players listen to the OGs? Because the truth is, you and I, we had a different mentality back then.
Right, yeah.
There was delayed gratification. I'm from Detroit, right? So, we could argue which city has better players, right? We had a lot of good players, as did LA. But
a lot of good
players. Yeah, Andre Rison, Glenn Rice, the Flintstones.
Yes.
I mean,
D. Smith. I mean, the goes on.
but I, oh man. Yeah. Don't, oh, you brought up Steve Smith. That's one of the moves I teach as a skills trainer. His move was famous. One move. He had one move, just like KJ, not KJ, not LA KJ, but Kevin Johnson. One move, and he could either take the space away or create the space. And when you got the jumper and can go downhill, forget it. It's over. Yeah. Exactly. So you have an instant gratification, the Z generation now. And so do you think that they listen, or is it that that's where there's a disconnect? I think, you know, what is it that you're sharing with the youth that allows them to understand that the journey or the process takes time, but you have to just trust it.
You hit a couple of good points. You know, you do have to trust the process. And for me, in my opinion, just when Chris and I had talked, and it kind of came about, you know, indirectly. And when they said, and I knew this, but I just wanted to see what it come back to me as well. They said, Trey, you guys are winners. You know, why would somebody not listen to someone who has produced, you know, championships? And I thought that was a real good point, because I didn't want to push that on a lot of kids. Hey, you know, I got a championship, you should listen to me. But in hindsight, it's correct. You know, if I can come at you indirectly and let you know my success came through winning, not my individual success, but my winning came through team success. And within that team success, I was granted individual, you know, awards. And I tell kids that, you know, everybody wants to be Steph Curry. You know, everybody wants to keep the ball in their hands, shoot fadeaway threes. But, you know, this generation has to start from the basics. You know, just like you said, what about a pivot? You know, what about an up and under? You know, let's start back to the basics. And if you're able to excel and reach a high climax, you know, like a Steph Curry, you know, Russell Westbrook, you know, high energy players, then that's what you're meant to do. But the majority of players in this game do one good thing. You know, Curry, they all do great things, but to survive, you need to do one good thing and you do it great. You know, Larry Nance Jr., he runs the floor up and, you know, and people say, why is he works hard and he gets to the boards and he runs the floor. He plays defense. You put that all in that mix right there from him, and he's going to have a job every year. So my thing is, hey, I'm going to put this winning attitude on you, but I also want you to find yourself and know what you think you can excel at. And if it's the little things, the intangible things that will, you know, keep that success going, not for only you, but the team, you know. And that's my thing, Mike. I try to put that in there, and I also try to put a positive attitude. This generation is spoiled. Everybody, you know, my son said, hey, I just need a trainer and I'll be okay. I'm like, hello, I'm right here.
You know? What in God's name? What in the world?
Right. You know, you have to just let them speak what they want to speak, and then you come and correct them. You know, sometimes you just don't want to put it on them too fast. But for me, I'm work in progress now, because, you know, I'm coming out more and trying to promote, you know, my book. And at the same time, I'm definitely feeling like I'm having a good influence on, you know, the kids I'm talking to, and as well some college players, you know, that have a chance to play, you know, at the next level, if it's overseas, you know, NBA. I think it's a good time for, you know, not only me, you see Chris, I think it's a great time for players to give back in some way, you know, some form, some way.
Yeah, a couple of things came to mind. I teach positionless. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I want a guard to be able to go into the high post and rip and go, or a couple jabs and shoot the mid-range, you know, Jimmy Butler-ish, or go in the post and be able to know how to handle themselves in the post, or be able to rock it out on the perimeter. You know, the same obviously goes for the bigs. But one thing that was interesting about your journey and what you were talking about that I thought of was, you were a great player in high school.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you earned it. And, you know, you had – and we've talked about this one aspect on the show a lot, about people don't go out in the streets anymore and play street ball. They don't get their ass kicked and have to wait an hour and a half before they get to get on the court again and be pissed about it during that entire hour and a half. And now that everything's timed, you go to your game, you go home, you don't understand and have the appreciation that we necessarily have when I was in Detroit, you know, getting disrespected because I was white and getting disrespected just because, you know, other people were out there and I hadn't earned my stripes yet.
Right. Yeah, that comes with it.
But having said that, I got cut three times. So there's two different kinds of players, in my opinion, whether it's back then or now. But the common thread is, do you have a why? And so my dad committed suicide when I was 9. And but, you know, I wouldn't say it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because that's, you know, sort of cathartic a little bit. But it did motivate me. And I was able to channel, you know, my sadness and my anger in a way that would never let me quit, even though I got cut three times. I got cut three times, middle school, high school, college.
Oh, wow. Now,
you, on the other hand, were great, you know, and you worked, you know, it's not like somebody gave it to you because you were just athletic or you were tall or something like that.
Right.
but then to achieve sustained greatness, you had to wait 3 years after college to continue to work to see the floor. Mm-hmm. And you had to be more of a role player, the 13th man, sort of the, you know, what people have said about you. And that's not always easy. You know, and I've heard people on the show talk about how some people couldn't do it and they got cut in the NBA because they weren't willing to be a third string point guard or things like that. So talk about how we tell, because I have a client that got cut three times.
Mm-hmm.
He's good.
Yeah.
And I'm telling him, go be the manager. Go feed the posts, go help rebound for the guards. The coach will see you for next year. And if it doesn't happen next year, if you get cut a fourth time, then maybe in college you'll make it in JUCO and I'll still be there for you to advocate for you.
Right.
You know? So go ahead. What are your thoughts on all that?
That's a good point. And where I kind of see this, and I'm relating this into my own situation, it's a business. It's all about the money. And when a team invests a lot of money in players that actually came out with a smooth transition from either high school to the NBA or college to the NBA, that's their major key player to put all the money into them. Now, in my case, I tore my Achilles before I played a second in the NBA.
Right.
So I realized I was going to be coming, you know, going taking the long route. And I accepted that. A lot of players don't accept that. And taking a long route does mean, hey, you're going to have to sacrifice some things. You're going to have to make sure your ego's in check. You know, you have to make sure you're the first one at practice, the last one to leave, all the intangible things.
Therapy.
Therapy, right. You already know. So no.
Hey, that back when Achilles didn't take 6 months.
Right. Yeah. So that was part of my job, and I showing a true commitment, like we're talking about now.
Yeah.
And you have to show that even when you see the players that maybe getting all the money, you know, hey, he's coming on a late bus all the time. That's not your job. I had to tell one of my teammates that his job, focus on you. Let him do his job. He's winning ball games for us at the same time. So it's kind of a storytale twist of Allen Iverson, you know, that was my guy. We came out, you know, about the same year, and to see him be amazing, you know, during his career, and just would think that if he might have had that Michael Jordan attitude and kind of kept things in place a little bit, he might have been maybe top 10 of all time, you know. And, you know, but when a team invests in you, that's what they invest. They're not going to pull back. You know, you are their number one goal in making sure the franchise is elevated. You know, you want every owner wants their franchise to championships to elevate every year. And when you make a smooth transition like these players do, I see no wrong in the team investing a lot of money in them. And that means, you know what, they're going to need a third, fourth, fifth, sixth, you know, fiddle all the way down to the end. You know, my job at the end is at the end of the bench, like, you know, when Hubert was, you know, there with me and Eldon Campbell, you know, these are vets. I tell all the young guys, listen to the veterans. You know, Hubert Davis has been in there forever. You know, that was my blessing. Eldon Campbell was in there forever. Darvin Ham. I learned a lot from Darvin. And that's key. Listen to the veterans that have been in your or playing your role or been in similar situations or actually have been starters and had to, you know, take a reserve role for the betterment of the team. And I learned all that stuff and, you know, and I made my own gumbo out of it. The gumbo of surviving in the NBA as long as I could.
So who taught you that? I mean, obviously you played for Tark, you know, and you played for a great high school coach.
Willie, he was a great coach too. A coach that a lot of people forget that I played for that had a really good influence on me was, you know, Joby Wright.
Yeah.
Joby was the coach at Wyoming with Theo Ratliff. He coached Theo Ratliff. He actually gave me the confidence to say, hey, Trey, go out there. Don't think about it. You know, you have a lot of coaches that definitely will, you know, make your mind scattery, have you overthinking, you know, some coach, every coach is different, you know, everybody reacts to coaches in a different way. And I thought that the way he just pushed it out on me to build my confidence before I actually played in the NBA it definitely helped me. So, you know, he's an unsung hero in a way.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, you definitely have to have a certain mentality, which is what you're definitely describing. And so do you feel like Tark helped you? Ben Braun was on the show. He's like, God, I missed Tremaine by a year, man. I wish I had that. I told him you were coming on. He's like, I missed him by a year.
Yeah.
But Tark, you know, obviously was a legend. A lot of the things that he was maybe accused of is like, now we're just accepting it. It was just ridiculous stuff. And I remember like LSU had an incident one time where one of the rules said you couldn't fly a kid home for the funeral, you know, just stupid stuff like that. You know, it was just, you're just trying to help the kids out with per diem or simple stuff. It's just stupid. But talk about what kind of man he was, because, you know, Tark was old school, you know, his longevity was incredible. I heard him speak at Nike clinics and man, I couldn't take my eyes off the guy. He was just fascinating to listen to.
Definitely. You know, Tark pulls you in, you know, first of all, just watching him as a kid and all the success at with players that were my favorite players as well. You know, I love Greg Anthony and Larry Johnson, Stacey Augmon, you know, Shackles. I mean, the whole five, Anderson Hunt. So, you know, those Anderson actually came on in LA. Yeah. So, you know, those were good days for basketball.
Yeah.
And, you know, I definitely saw the Running Rebels more than I saw Duke, just knowing them, you know, being on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And just to see that I was only maybe 3 hours from Vegas too. You know, I did want to go, always wanted to go to, you know, UNLV and seeing that. And it happened to spin, go full circle where I happened to end up not actually going to UNLV, but actually going to Fresno where Tark is alma mater.
Yeah, right.
That was a good thing. I was influenced off, you know, off the back. I knew I didn't want to play with, you know, Todd next year with Coach Bowles at Cal.
Yeah,
nothing.
Yeah.
Bowles, you know, we just were on different pages. Still a good dude, you know. Yeah. And I said I was going to make that commitment. But just like Ben said, once I saw Ben was, I said, oh, Ben's coming. And, you know, I was stuck. I'm like, oh, man, what am I going to do here? And, you know, Tark, you know, he put it on me. He said, you committed. What about your loyalty? Where's your loyalty?
Yes,
people. Come on, Trey. I said, right, Tark. I'm going to follow through. I made a commitment, and I'll see you down there in the summertime. So, all right, that's what I'm talking about. I said, all right. You know, we were on the same page, and the success wasn't at Fresno like we wanted to be. You know, if you look at on paper, it's probably one of the most scariest rosters known today. You know, unbelievably. I still look at that roster today since I'm trying to put the documentary together. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm just looking like this, like, is this really true? I mean, you got 1 through 10, Mike. Just,
yeah, I know.
You know, and it just didn't all fall in together. But just to have experienced that with Tark and, you know, Danny, Coach Welch, Johnny Brown. It just was, and what, and them having to try to control us. You know, we were, you know, we weren't just your regular bunch, you know, and picket fence. You know, I had an option. I wasn't a second chance player because I chose to go to Fresno. Tart actually took a lot of players and gave them second chances. Yeah. And, you know, that's what he's known for, too. You know, he's going to give you a chance, but don't F it up. You know, don't mess it up. He's going to give you a chance. And it's only so much he can do. And we had a lot of teammates that just couldn't, you know, hang the Damon Forney's, a couple other guys that were just, I forgot his name. But we had some talent on that team. It just didn't fall through. But, you know, we caught on late, went to the NIT, you know, Final Four just to play, you know, to the end of the, you know, playing longer than anybody else was a good, you know, feeling just to end it off at Fresno.
Yes, you know, a couple of things have changed. You know, now the NBA roster is really 10, 11, 12 deep. Everybody can score.
Right.
Whereas back then you were just sort of a, you know, role player, or, you know, a hustler or rebound or whatever, you know, a single dimensional player. And, and then, you know, now we have the transfer portal. And that's just, I think that, you know, the first thing I thought about the other day was they don't want to deal with it.
Right.
They don't want to deal with it. They don't want to have to go through and get the criticism for why are we accepting this excuse and not this, man. Right. Just let everybody go once. The coaches go anyways. We've been hearing about this for years. So I'm in favor of it for a one-time deal. Yeah. But that's different too, because you have to sit out, you know, back in your day for a year before you could play.
Right, right. Yeah, that was definitely – and that's one thing I tell in my book too. That's a good point. I'm glad you mentioned that. I tell kids – if you have the chance to play every year that you can, taking a year off from anything is tough. And I had to learn that. Now, I was a student for a whole year, which was great. And I learned how to, you know, keep my mind strong and right. But not going out on that floor, and that's what I love to do, and I have a passion for that, that's tough. And I wouldn't trade that in. And this is nothing against a target, any school at Fresno. But if I had that chance to know that I would be playing next year and nothing was going to hold me back, Mike, from playing, you know, hey, I was, you know, that close, you know, from making the transition to the next level anyway. So I tell kids in the book, hey, try to not have so much pride in your, put so much emotions into your decision-making of what happened prior to you making that decision. I had a lot of emotions in there, you know, and wanting to leave and get out of there, you know, with Bowles. And, you know, I'm demanding, you know, minutes, you know, at Cal. And he's like, oh, I don't know. You know, I'm saying, well, hey, you promised Sharif this and that. And I'm like, hey, just give me this and we can, you know, take it from there. And, you know, not knowing what was going to happen, you know, months after that, I would have just took time, you know. So I tell the kids, don't put your emotions in it. Think more business long term, and hopefully that can help them. It might not. I don't know, but I'm here just to give them that advice.
You're listening to an interview with Tremaine Foulkes from Los Angeles, California. He won an NBA title with the Detroit Pistons, and he will now talk to you about the culture of college basketball. And don't forget to check out our sponsors, SportRx.com and CityLokes.com. And enter the code DELI10 for SportRx and The Sports Deli for City Lokes for your special 10% discount. We also want to give a shout out to PSK Collective. You can check them out at pskcollective.com or at walmart.com. And one more major department store that is going to be announced very shortly. We also want to give a shout out to Natty White's female only brand basketball shoe, Moolah Kicks. Check them out at Moolah, Moolah like money, Kicks like shoes, plural, MoolahKicks.com, and you can be one of the first people to purchase them for your daughters or for your girls or women's high school or college basketball teams, and they're going to be dropping in May of 2021. And my team, where I coach at a low-income first-generation high school here in San Diego, we are going to buy the inaugural pair of the Moolah Kicks for next season. Now back to this incredible interview with Tremaine Foulkes, former NBA champion, joining us today in the Sports Deli. So do you think coaches have to approach things differently now in terms of the culture? You know, HBCs are landing kids. Kenny Blakeney's getting some kids at Howard, and, you know, kids are considering different options. There's another league besides the G League that people can go to and make $100,000 a year and have different options to go overseas, like one of the Ball brothers did. You know, so I coached college basketball for a long time, and as much as I wanted the kids to come and visit lots of places and be certain about their decision, I wanted them to come for me, you know, and I wanted them to like who I was and feel like I cared about them outside of basketball. And so, you know, I think those are the coaches that are going to have more success. Even Coach K, I saw just grab someone out of the portal. He's probably livid. He's like, God, I got to do this transfer stuff. You know, Rashawn McCloud was on, and he was the first guy that ever, you know, went to Duke, you know, as a transfer. And, you know, it's a different time. You know, you have an old school mentality with a lot of these coaches, with the new kids, like I said earlier, and it's definitely interesting. So talk a little bit about your journey in the NBA. Tore your Achilles, you were sort of a journeyman, and you had a lot of different experiences. You know, to share with us, you know, the story maybe that you went with KJ in a snowstorm, or, you know, to you know, you have some different stories, right?
Oh, yeah, we had, I mean, I was, you know, those stories I could have been on live all day with Chris, because, you know, he was for a lot of, which I told him, I said, man, you were there for the high school, the college, and you both were there trying to grind our way to the NBA, you know.
Well, we'll blame that past trip on KJ.
KJ, my boy, I'll pick somebody else. Oh, yeah, you already know the history with KJ. I'm always a Chris fan. He saved us a lot in modern day, man. So, you know, against me. So we go way back.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, he was there for a lot of that journey. And, you know, the journey was just a roller coaster ride like most of us. You know, I'm thinking I'm going to be a, you know, a lottery pick coming from Cal or close to a first rounder. And then, you know, I end up taking a step backwards to try to take a couple more steps forward. You know, and I love that I stayed in California, you know, during my college career. Yeah. I was able to stay there and play with, you know, Tark, not close, you know, I wasn't far away from home. That was awesome. But coming out of college, right about then, I wasn't, my status, I would say I was probably a late first round to maybe not even getting drafted. And it kind of showed that, you know, I had some things that where I wanted to go right for me. Eddie Jordan has said, hey, Trey, we're going to pick you up, you know, with the Kings and, you know, with the 32nd, 33rd pick. And he gets fired the day of the draft. So I'm like, okay, I don't think anybody's going to pick me up. I only worked out for a couple of guys, nobody in the 40s or the 50s. So I know me and Ryan Bowen got drafted with Denver with the back-to-back picks in 98. And, you know, back then you had Nick Van Exel and McDice. You know, they had a good squad, you know. So I'm like, special, man.
Yeah.
And things didn't work out. It was a lockout year. You remember the lockout year. So a lot of things didn't work out during the lockout year for a lot of guys. So I didn't take it personal. What I did, I said, I'm going to take this step by step, you know. And financially, I didn't have the money then. You know, of course, you struggle until you actually get a guaranteed contract.
Yeah.
And right when I felt I was getting my niche, you know, I played in the IBL for the Cincinnati Stuff, you know, that's where I believe Oscar, you know, had that team, part of that team. And he ended up liking me so much, Mike, he invited me to an NBA Legends tour.
Wow.
And, you know, Espa, Webb, Dominique, Rolando Blackman. Guys, and I was just like, oh, I'm flabbergasted. So I'm like, this is special, this is a moment in time. And we went to Shanghai, and you know, I'm having the best time of my life. Next thing you know, I'm having the worst time of my life. I tear my Achilles in practice, and I just remember seeing Rolando Blackman just walking the other way and shaking his head just like this. He's like, because he already knew I never tore an Achilles, so I'm thinking, hey, maybe this is a funny ankle sprain, right? But then I'm like, well, if my leg is not cooperating.
Right, it's different.
So, you know, those adjustments that, you know, having to try to bounce back over something that I never had, an injury I had. I never was really injury prone. And so that really kind of set me and had to kind of just have a mind, body, and soul type of experience to try to see if this is what I really wanted to do. Because I said, you know, I'm probably just going to coach now. Everybody's telling me, I remember Tyrone Lue said, oh, you tore your Achilles? You're done. I'm like, oh, well, thank you. So, you know, I just had these mixed feelings on the torn Achilles, and nobody saying, like, you're going to come back and you're going to be twice as strong. You know, nobody comes back twice as strong off an Achilles tear. So, you know, a lot of reality had to set in, Mike. And my thing was, I was going to give it a good run, and it came kind of full circle, slowly but surely, having to come back in first game, play with the Golden, Harlem Globetrotters. You know, Joby had coached the Globetrotters, and I said, if there's any way, anything I need to do just to get on the court, that was an option. Because, you know, they had, you had your trick team, your fun team, but then you had your competitive team that played the colleges. You remember at the preseason?
Yep.
So that was kind of a perfect timing thing. I got on with Joby. I played a couple games.
Wow.
Didn't play much, but it was just fun to get on the court. And yeah. You remember the Globetrotter days?
I remember both those teams. Heck yeah.
Yeah. So that was a fun experience. But, you know, then, you know, it goes from going to overseas a little bit, trying to just see where I was more of a replacement player for, you know, for players that's coming in, trying to get the last couple months, you know.
Playoffs.
Playoffs. That's a classic. That's always going to be on air forever. I ain't made that more of a meme these days.
Really, man. Can you imagine?
Right. Real. So, you know, the journey, it was a daily journey with passports, you know, here and there. Not coming back with the most money, but enough money to come back until I find the next job. Mm. And that landed me in Sacramento, you know, to work out with Gus Armstead. Yeah. Son plays for the Niners, Eric Armstead. And Gus is a trainer, you know, he trains everybody. And I end up coming out here because my girlfriend was in Sacramento at the time, my kid's mother. And it kind of worked in, it kind of worked all together. Like, okay, well, I'm coming out here with her. I'm able to rehab out here. I'm able to find Gus, the trainer. And I really came into my own because I wasn't in LA trying to, you know, you don't want to be in LA when you're not producing the results that people you are expecting, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, gave me a time just to really get things, you know, all in one and concentrate on trying to get back, man. And, you know, I went overseas. This is probably the end of the story now. I went overseas and to Greece. At that time, Bill Duffy I was with Bill Neff at first. I was with Bill Duffy coming out of college for a second. But Bill Neff sent me, you know, he had Troy Hudson, Kevin Ollie. Yeah, he had some good players. I introduced him to Matt Barnes, for a while. Before Matt had went with somebody else, but really good guy. He knew how to get the mid player guys in there. You know, he was good with that. So I really appreciated him with that. But you know, when the planes crashed in 99, you know, the 9/11, I ended up trying to come back because I was scared. I said no. So they held my passport for a month, ended up coming back. Before I came back, I was on a computer down there in the hotel in Greece. And I said, oh, the G League, the MBDL. I'm sorry. It was the MBDL.
That's right, MBDL.
I called Bill. I said, Bill, you got to get me in here. You got to get me. He said, no, they had a draft already. I said, but they have a supplemental draft. So I was able to get in there and get in a supplemental draft. And next thing you know, I'm over here back in the States actually playing because, you know, the CBA did not work out. Isaiah kind of took over that league and he didn't do the worst. He just didn't give us the money. I like Isaiah, but at that time was maybe about $200 to $300 a week, you know, and it just wasn't suitable. And I think people realized that. So, the D League came, you know. So, when I found out Jeff was the coach too, you know, it was like, okay, well, this league is, they're taking this serious. You got an NBA veteran, you know, all-star guy that wants to coach too. And it was looking like everything just looked like it was meant to be.
Yeah.
And they won the league pretty well. You know, we did have 12-hour bus rides. You know, that was probably the only downside just having to stay on that bus so long, you know, and probably having to eat, what was the Waffle House, you know? You know, other than that, it was perfect for me because that's where I was looking. I felt like I was right at home. I had a couple family members in Atlanta, so the drive from Columbus, Georgia was an hour. And, you know, me coming out the blocks, you know, really helped me. You know, I brought some positive energy to that team, and we bounced it off each other. And wow. Next, you know, I was one of the three to get called up first. You had Birdman from Denver, Birdman. And you had Jason Hart, who's from LA, my guy. And, yep. And then you had me. So a week before I got called up, I was ready to leave to go to, was it Japan? They were offering some money. And I said, you know what? Let me just hold tight. I believe that's where, because Charles O'Bannon was up. I believe it was Japan. Yeah. And wow. I actually just said, give me a week or two, because I was really ready to, because I needed the money. You got to think, I still haven't earned a real good, honest check. And by the time I had a couple good games, Lamar was suspended, and Corey had hit his hand on the scores table in Orlando, mad at a call. And it just happened. You know, you got to have a little luck and timing in there. And it happened right there. You got to think, wow, not only did I get a call up, but I'm going home. And so going home was a blessing. So a lot of things I couldn't tell you that it was going to be, you know, and that's why I had to tell you in the book. I just don't know what's going to happen. It's day to day, week to week, month to month, when you're just, you know, trying to reach for your dream. So it just happened like that. I was, you know, Bill called me. Of course, he said, you want to go home? I said, no. I said, I want to go to Japan first. He said, no, to play. I said, to play? He said, yeah, you're getting a call up. And of course, you know what I said. Man. The Lakers? So I said, he said, no, the other team. I said, the Clippers? I said, that's cool. He said, you ready to go? Pack your bags. Man, I must have packed my bags in about, you know, 2 minutes. And all the players came in.
Wow.
You know, they felt a part of that.
Yeah,
and when you're crying all the time, you know, they kind of, you feel that, you know, hey, oh, man, Trey, you part of, I'm feeling that. Because we all did. We was just, man, you know. It was tough, you know. So, you know, eating hometown buffet too, you know, that's the only thing in town. So it was just a blessing to get that opportunity going home and having my parents watch me, and they didn't have to go far, you know. So crazy journey.
Man, that you talk about, you know, it doesn't always turn out like that, but just to know that, you know, your hard work and recovering and it's just a mindset, and not everybody has that mindset. And it's just such a credit to you and your resiliency, and your ability to, overcome adversity. So I'm so glad that that's the direction that you went in, and, you can look back now and just, shake your head and be so proud of yourself, and like you said earlier, be able to share it with the youth of today, and use that platform to inspire the current generation and teach them not only the physical tools that you need, you know, to make it to the highest level, but the mental game, which is so important, and you know, how you have to have basketball IQ as well as emotional IQ. Otherwise, you'll never be able to overcome the tough times, because everyone faces those lightning bolts that Pat Riley always talks about, and those speed bumps that are inevitably going to come along. So that's the end of part one of this incredible interview with Tremaine Foulkes. We hope you enjoyed it, and we hope that you listen to part two of the interview with Tremaine Foulkes, former NBA champion with the Detroit Pistons. Just an honor to share space with him. Remember, your voice matters when fighting systemic racism. Read a book, acknowledge your white privilege, watch a movie about institutional racism, call your local or state representatives, and or have a conversation with someone that doesn't look like you. We have to change the economic, educational, police, housing, prison, and voting suppression narratives that currently need to be changed in this country. And the only way to do that is to listen and learn and then help be a part of the mobilization and change that we want to see. Remember, you can always send us an email to thesportsdeli@gmail.com. Yeah. Until next time, please mask up still. Remember, Black Lives Matter. Peace.